Yo, what is going on, my friends? You guys are tuning in to podcast episode number 15 with my friend Jenny Neff. Sorry, guys, for the short hiatus. Last month, I had the opportunity to head out to West Palm Beach with my Ascend Mastermind, my two coaches, Alex Pardo and Steve Cavanaugh. It was awesome. Had some big breakthroughs with my own growth in understanding what is required of a leader, what that looks like and how I can grow in those areas. So if you're interested, let me know. I'd love to share with you what I learned on that retreat. And then if you guys are following on Instagram at flip4freedom, you'll see that I spend a little bit of time in Guatemala. If you're open to hearing about why I'm traveling to Guatemala or why I traveled in the past, just let me know. But today, stick around. We're going to talk with Jenny and Neff on the importance of marketing. These guys got started with absolutely no experience. They hopped right in, paid for coaching, and it paid off in dividends. This summer, they took the whole summer off to spend it with their kids. I'm excited to share with you episode number 15. I will be right back.
Welcome to the Flip for Freedom Show, presenting you with the best tips, tricks, and strategies that'll help you be successful in business without sacrificing life. Featuring powerful stories and insights from successful investors in both national and local markets, you'll get a clear look into the processes and mindsets that drive personal and professional achievement. True success starts with the right framework, and we want to help you build it. Now, let's get started with your host, Brett Iwanowitz.
How are you guys doing today?
Hey, good.
Hey, I'm excited to have you guys on. I feel like I have so many people in my network, and then sometimes I'm just like, who the heck can I get on the show? And then it takes me forever to think of somebody. But I'm pumped to share your story with everyone because I love your origin. I can't say that word. Your origin story, best way to say it. We were just talking about it before we started recording. But if you could give people a little context of like what you guys do, who you are, that'd be a great place to start this show.
All right, I'll start. So I'm Jenny, obviously that's Neff. And we started our real estate about 4 years ago. We joined a little group called Fortune Builders. Neff has a machining background and my family owns a nail shop. So I was working with family in there. When Neff got laid off, you know, we decided we wanted to do something for ourselves. So lo and behold, you know, Neff hears these commercials on the radio, learn to flip houses using other people's money. And just like, sign up and do that. I'm like, no, scam. I'm not going to doing that. Right.
A year later, right.
We're again. And so I like, you know, I give in and I say, fine, you know, we'll go, but we're not buying anything. We're not doing anything. We're just going, you know, once we go, you'll shut up about it and then we'll keep it moving. So we go and I'm like an hour into it. I'm like, oh, where's the catch? The catch is coming, right?
Yeah.
So we got into the catch because it was a buy one, get one, right? It's a BOGO. You get, you know, two tickets, but really for the price of one. We're like, you know, what do we got to lose? Right. So we go and we do that. And then we do the 3-day seminar and we were sold by the first day. Our minds had totally changed and we had our biggest investment in real estate right there from the jump is in the education.
That's a huge move. So you guys jumped right in. What was it about that first day that sold you guys on the idea of investing in real estate? Like what was the hook that got you guys?
The biggest thing was working for yourselves, creating a lifestyle that you wanted, right? And, you know, making yourself better, making your day-to-day lives better compared to, you know, doing the regular 9-to-5 and you're doing the same thing over and over again. And, you know, what are you getting out of that? And, you know, making someone else's dream come true instead of your own. So I think that was the turning point for me. What was it for you?
I think it was learning to make money work for you instead of you working for the money.
Yeah, that's probably one of the That's almost like a life in AirVision, right? It's like you have your life controls your business, not your business controlling your life. And real estate definitely do that. You guys think that, well, Jenny, you come from like an entrepreneurial family, it sounds like. Do you think that played a role in like deciding to like, hey, we'll figure this out, because business owners, right, they have to figure things out if they start something. Do you think that played a role into like you deciding to take that step that day?
Yeah, I mean, my family is came over here from Vietnam in the 70s with nothing. They didn't have anything to go on. They just came over here with the American dream to try to better their lives and start from the ground up. And so that grit, I think, is still instilled in me. And we have to make it, right? No matter what opportunities are thrown our way, we're going to make it work. There's no failing because your livelihood's depending on it.
Hmm. What about you, Nath? Like, was it harder? Was it you came up with the idea, but who was it, like, the one who really, I mean, or was it a team effort where you're both like, we're going to do this together, or were one of you like more enthusiastic about this than the other?
I was more trying to change my career because I wasn't trying to go back to being a machinist, because that was like the only job I ever had was being a machinist. So I wanted to do something where I was controlling my hours and having more time with my family. And awesome. Real estate, I was able to see that happen.
Now, when you guys started,
he has the big dream.
Networking.
And I'm the safe one. I'm like, oh, I don't know. That sounds really sketchy. Can we do that? And he's like, yeah, we're going to go for it. And I'm just like, oh, okay. We're going to go for it.
And she was always pretty held back. I was always like.
But I think that's the key to a healthy relationship, yeah, right? Because one person can be like, let's just do this. And then you kind of have a voice of reason. All right, well, like maybe we can, but let's put together a plan to get there. So who's the planner? Who's like the idea person? Who's the planner? Are you the planner, Jenny?
No, I think when it comes to certain things, we both balance each other out really good when it comes to that. So sometimes I have a concept and then he executes, or vice versa. So it's just depending on what it is.
That's awesome. I mean, I think that's, I don't want to say that's rare, but it's like in my mastermind, there are couples, there are some that work better together than others. And then some that don't work together at all, because it would never work. So I think it's really cool that you guys can complement each other like that. Would you have any advice for anyone listening, like that's married, that wants to do this, that you could share that might be beneficial to helping them like work towards the same goal together?
I think we pretty got down pat what we know, what our weaknesses and strengths are. And I mean, there are times where we really do bump heads, and a lot of times it's either or that's going to have to give a little bit and compromise. So communication and compromise, I think, is the biggest thing in it. You know, knowing what each other can really take on, and knowing when the other is taking on too much and saying, hey, I got your back. What else do you need me to do to make this work?
That's great advice. I think that requires a level of maturity, because you have to set your pride aside, right? And say, hey, I don't know how to do this. Or was that really hard to work through that, to get to a point where you're not like, oh,
oh my God, it took so much practice. It was
you're
not
like, I want to kill you now.
Yeah, exactly. It took a lot of practice to get there. But, you know, I think so far we've done really good. And at the end of the day, not only are we business partners, but we're life partners first. And that has to be first.
That's incredible. I don't know if you know, but I'm no longer single. I've been single for 12 years.
Yeah.
And
congratulations.
Right. I think I'm really, really excited about it. But I love that. I thought I would, the reason I've been single for so long is because I thought I would have to compromise my life and my vision and my goals to be in a relationship with someone. And I'm like, I'll never do that. I would never do that. I'd rather be single the rest of my life. And then, you know, I come across someone who was also thinking the same thing, that if she was going to be in a relationship, she'd also have to compromise her vision and her goals. I've never been more excited looking at the future, having the ability to like plan that and work together with someone doing that. So
you guys are working towards a common goal.
Yeah. So now I can kind of put myself in your position and kind of live vicariously through you. Obviously there's probably more challenges working with someone, but at the end of the day, knowing that, you know, you two have each other's backs is probably pretty reassuring when you guys are doubting what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Cause yeah. No one understands more than we do what each other is going through. Hmm. When it comes to, you know, the business or, you know, relationships and, you know, what we need to do day in and day out, no one else is going to understand that better than that.
Yeah. No, I'm pumped for you guys. I'm smiling over here because I'm just really excited to kind of share, I guess, how you guys did get started. So you started Fortune Builders.
We started Fortune Builders. You know, it took us a year of, you know, networking, you know, studying the curriculum, practicing the rehab estimator. I mean, we went all in our first year, and we went to, you know, RIA meetings. RIA meetings are so important. So important. They did not stress that enough. We had coaching calls. We took full advantage of what they provided for us, and we immersed ourselves that first year. We didn't get our first deal until a year later. And then so a year of saying no, you think someone would like back down and say, forget it, I throw in the towel, I give up. There was none of that for us. We could not give up. And every time we got better at it, every time we got, you know, when it came down to talking with a person that was, you know, ready to sell a house, when I see myself from the very beginning until I am now, that's, it comes out so easily, so natural. Whereas the first time we were nervous and we didn't know if we were saying the right things or not.
That's incredible. So I don't know much about Fortune Builders, but like when you guys signed up with them, what were some of the things that they provided to you in order to get to where you were comfortable talking with sellers and negotiating and even making offers on properties? Like what did that program look like? It sounded like you had coaching calls, you were networking. Can you kind of like give us
Fortune Builders provided us with a whole curriculum from start to bottom, from doing transactions, marketing, where to look for houses, a CRM where you kind of put in all your data and keep it all together and organize your contacts, your buyers, your sellers, wholesalers, rehabbing your lenders. Mm-hmm. Yes. So all of that to kind of keep you organized, you know, starting an LLC, you know, making sure that we're connected to, you know, people in the industry like attorneys, CPAs. So they kind of like pushed you to go do all these things, but that you needed to be accountable to actually do those action steps. Hmm. Funding. Yeah.
Do you think that fast tracked you? Like how long do you think it would have taken if you had to figure out all that stuff on your own?
Oh my God. Years.
It would have taken a long time. I probably would have lost money because of things we didn't know. And you know, like mistakes or things unseen that we didn't know to look for, that probably would have cost us a lot more money.
Yeah.
And probably made deals not profitable. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So hopefully you don't mind me asking this question. Cause I kind of want to drive this home, but what did it cost to get into Fortune Builders?
At the time we paid $35,000. That was our little nest egg. It was a big investment. People thought we were crazy. They're like, that's a scam. What are you talking about? You're going to give them how much and what are you going to get out of it? Neff and I thought, you know what? It's like a college education. You know, we know nothing. We have no background in real estate whatsoever, like none. Right. And, you know, we need to learn the best way possible to make it successful. So that's what we did.
When you look back at that purchase now, like, what do you think of? Like, if you were to look at that $35,000, like, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? That's a lot of money. $35,000.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think we wouldn't be able to do or be in the position where we are now, 4 years later, ahead of our goals. We have, you know, 6 rental units now. Our vision to where our life wanted to be was to spend more time with our kids and be more flexible. This is our first summer that we're going to be almost all the way off with them.
Yes. Amazing.
Right. And that was my goal 4 years ago when we wrote down what we envision our life to be. and we have surpassed, I thought 5 years into our real estate business, then we'll be starting acquiring rental properties, but we have not. We need at least 25 to 30 doors to be able to say, you know what, you know, this is all we need to live off of right now. We don't need to work. We only work because we want to.
Yep.
And I'm already seeing that it's that so much more possible and easier to obtain than I ever thought possible.
That's freaking awesome. And guys listening to this podcast, you're probably like, you might still be saying $35,000 is a lot of money, but if you, like, the question I always ask people, like, can you even put a dollar amount on teaching someone financial freedom through investing in real estate? I don't even think you put a dollar amount on it. Sometimes I'm like, when I'm interviewing people for coaching, I'm like, I could probably charge you more, and they agree with me, but they still don't sign up, but like, because they're not ready for that commitment yet. And
exactly.
I think, when you spend $35,000, you better believe there's going to be some arguments in the house if you're not actually doing what you're supposed to be doing.
There's a lot of accountability.
That helped us stay in line.
Yeah, it did.
I was like, that was it. We're all in. We better make this happen.
Yeah.
So what were some of the biggest things that you learned up front that you think that really fast-tracked you to finding your first property?
Their biggest thing was networking. You can't make money without knowing anybody. You have to network. You have to go out there and meet people and get out there at these RIA meetings and see who else is doing stuff, because real estate is such a huge genre of, you could dabble in this and you can dabble in that and still make money. There's enough for everyone to make money off in real estate. And those, being comfortable with uncomfortable, right? How many times Neff and I, like, all right, at this meeting, we're going to go up to someone, you're going to go talk to them. And he'll be like, no, it's your turn to go talk to them. I'm like, oh, man, like, you know, and so we got to the point where we got really good. We divide and conquered. And whenever we went around and somebody said, hey, I'm lending money, or hey, I'm a wholesaler. And we just went out there and we gave away our cars, we gained cars. So we made a competition, how many cars we can get in a night.
That's freaking amazing. And
whoever came back with more cards, you know, didn't have to do dishes. Yeah. So that was that.
No dishes. So who won the most?
Who
won the most out of both of you guys in this competition? Who got the most cards the most times?
I think it was always a tie.
Yeah.
No, it was never. No, it wasn't. I had a couple more cards sometimes.
I love that. So before we started recording, one of the quotes, this is from the book, it's called The Who Not How. Like, the first, after I read the first chapter, I'm like, I had the book in my hand. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I don't even need to read the rest of this. But it was so impactful. It's that it's not a knowledge problem. It's a people problem. And I think that the biggest, you know, we're our biggest roadblocks, right? Because we think we need to know everything before we get started. And oftentimes people never get started. But if you can find the right people and network with, you can call them when you don't have the answer. So what is some advice that you could give people? Because networking is a skill. You can't just go out and ask for things. So what did you guys do to build your network that people can take from this and go out and start networking successfully?
Just really being yourself when you're going introducing people. You know, you look them in the eye and, you know, you tell them what you're about and who you are. And, you know, they're people just like you are. And if you're genuine, I think they'll, you know, want to work with you and get to know you. And, you know, one of our good buddies that we really have looked up to and helped us was Scott Spear. And when we met him, he was just a really amazing person and genuinely wanted to help you, want to see you succeed. And, you know, hey, if you have a question, he was available. And I think that's important when you're, you know, out there and you're fresh and you're new. And just because you're new doesn't mean no one doesn't want to work with you. You know, they can kind of tell when they're talking to you, you're new, right? But I think when you express that you're willing to learn and you're willing to take advice and you're humble, I think that makes the biggest difference.
What does that look like, though, willing to take advice? Can you put that? Can you expound on that a little bit? Because like, I mean, someone's only willing to give you advice if you're usually doing something with it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be willing to be coachable, willing to be teachable, willing to, you know, not per se like have tough skin, but when someone's telling you something, really have your eyes and have an open mind to what they're trying to show you, because they've already done it. You know, why change it if they've done it and they're successful at it?
Yep. That's great advice. Naf, did you want to touch on that? I know you were saying something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Jenny kind of clarified, you know, being teachable. And if you don't know what you're talking about, don't talk about it.
I think one of the best lessons that I had was in a bad partnership. We won't get into the details. That's how we learn sometimes. We learn not to do business with certain people. But, you know, we were going through this project and things just weren't working. And I'm trying to like explain to this guy like what's going on, and everything that I was saying was true, but he just said, use my language, but he's like, can you just shut up and listen to what I'm telling you? I mean, I didn't agree with what it was he was saying, but like,
but you know, said the
virus. You know, so I'm like, okay, but that stuck with me, because sometimes, you know, you might not expect something to come out of someone's mouth that might help you, but it's just humbled me to like in every conversation just to be like, okay, let me just shut up and listen. And even if I don't like what someone's saying, I should still at least listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then ask questions from there. So yeah, that's a huge, I mean, that's big in networking, is just listening to what someone has to say. And I think one of the things that made a difference for me too was, adding value to people before asking for something. So did you experience any of that? Like, how did you cultivate relationships with some of these lenders to do some of your deals?
I think the fact that when we had fortune builders behind us, and even though we were fresh meat newbies, to say the least, we really did have a lot of practice by the time we ended up with our first deal. I mean, we walked hundreds of properties and we could walk through a property in like 30 minutes and know the numbers. We were really good with our ARV. You know, we just, the way we laid everything out when we introduced ourselves and who we were and the numbers that we had, I think they were like, oh, okay, well, I guess, you know, you're new, but you know what you're talking about. And yeah. I think that gave someone else confidence that, you know, they can really invest in us.
That's a great point.
And since starting, I think we've used this. Yeah. Since starting, we've used the same three lenders. We just kept turning around their money. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah. Those are the relationships that can last a lifetime. And I love that you guys, again, this is what also stops people from finding money, is like, you just ask someone for money and that lender is like, okay, well, how many deals have you looked at? It's like, you guys were underwriting properties over and over and over again. And then you go to this lender and then they're like, well, you haven't done any deals yet, but if you've been bringing them deals and underwriting deals and then show them over and over again, they're going to give you money. And that's what separates the people who find money and the people that don't find money, is you actually took what you learned and you're out there in the field looking at properties, willing to make offers, whether or not you even had the money yet.
Yeah. And it's so true when Fortune Builder said, like, you know, the money is going to come if you have the deal, but you can't get the money if you don't find the deal. So in order to do that, you gotta have footwork out there. You have to be out there pounding the pavement. You know, there wasn't any weeks that went by where we didn't go look at houses and put offers out there. Yeah, we heard a bunch of no's. We heard a lot of no's, like a lot of no's. But, you know, when we heard yes, we didn't believe it. We're like, wait, what?
What?
I mean, we offered too much.
We offered too much, right? It was too easy for him to say yes. And you know, but we were, you know, on the phone like, oh my God, it's happening. We're like, okay, yeah, well, we'll send the papers over. We'll have you sign the documents and we'll get the attorneys involved. And then we hang up the phone and we're literally jumping for joy, right? Yeah. We're just so over the moon, ecstatic. And the kids are like, what are you guys doing? And we're, you know, we just over the moon that we had our first yes. And then a week later, acquired our second property subject to We assumed the mortgage. Didn't know how to do that, but that happened.
That's incredible. I haven't even done a subject two yet, so I might be calling you guys for advice on how to do a subject two.
Yeah. And, you know, again, that was just driving around, you know, driving for dollars. And Neff happened to be driving down the street that, you know, he recognized the seller. It was an old coworker of his, and saw the for sale sign on there, and, you know, called her and say, "Hey, you're selling your house. What's going on?" She goes, "Yeah, I'm selling the house, but I'm having a hard time. You know, the roof is, you know, overexpired. The furnace is overexpired. I need to have a cash buyer. I can't, you know, find someone traditionally, you know, that is contingent on a mortgage. And I'm just having a hard time. I need to leave. I need to go to Puerto Rico." At the time, Hurricane Maria happened. Wow. And so her motivation was she needed to get out of the house and leave and go to Puerto Rico for family. So we offered her some cash up front and we assumed her mortgage, and then we rehabbed it. And we rented it out. We kept it for like 2 years, and then we sold it when the market was just booming. So not only did we make money on the rental, we turned around, refinanced and cashed out, made money that way, and then we sold it too, and still made out good.
In two years of rent,
yeah.
That's incredible. So how many properties have you guys either renovated or flipped at this point?
Oh gosh, I want to... Probably under 10, I want to say.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's sad when you don't remember, right?
Yeah, you gotta think back. Yeah, think back. Like, how many was it?
You can get that one. So to some people, you guys might still be newbies. I don't think you're newbies. I think you guys definitely know what you're doing. But can you recall that first property that you bought? Like, what were some of the biggest concerns prior to closing on that? And like, what were some speed bumps or some problems that came along the way that you could just walk some listeners through on how you dealt with those things, you know, being your first investment property?
So the first one was through a probate. So I went and got, I wrote letters to people who inherited homes from loved ones who passed, and they just, the executors don't know what they want to do with the house. So this particular home, when I wrote them, he called me back. And of course, you know, Fortune Builders gives you these, you know, what is it called? These paperwork that you walk through and you kind of like check off. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, see if it's qualifying property. And that's what I was doing. And, you know, everything looked good. I looked up, you know, the zip code where it was, and, you know, I kind of had an idea what the ARV and that zip code was going for. And, you know, we just made an appointment to walk the house. So when we walked the house, this house was not only a hoarder house, but this man that lived in it smoked in it for over like 40 years. It was just crazy. You could see the tar on the walls. You know, it was just really, really ran down. And so we walked the property and, you know, we ran our numbers and we got back to the seller and told him our number is this. We offered 60 at first. And then while we were there negotiating, our genie was there. And they happened to be doing an inspection and was like, "Oh, your riser is no good." And we're like, what? Say that again. And so of course the RG&E person said that in front of the seller, and he heard that. I was like, "Well, as you know, now I gotta replace the electrical panel and the riser and all that's gonna come off." He was like, "All right, fine, I'll take another $3,000 off." We're like, "Oh, okay, even better." So we got the house for 57. And you know, we at that time we had lenders in place already, because, you know, through networking, we always had readily people there, right? You got to talk to your contractors. You got to, you know, have your lenders available. So when you did file, you know, everything was already in place and you can just call these people up and say, "Hey, I need quotes," or "Hey, I need lending." So when we talked to Scott and, you know, we told him that we, you know, landed our first deal, that we needed it for the purchase. We had took out a HELOC on our own house for the rehab. So that's how we got our first deal.
We only got the loan for the buy, and then we put the cost of the rehab.
Mm-hmm.
because we were new. So they wanted what they call
skin in the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as a newer investor, most lenders are going to require that you come up with at least 20% out of your pocket, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you guys do to position yourself to be able to get that HELOC out? Is that something that you work towards, or is that just something that, you know, God blessed you with, like buying right and just having equity? What did that look like?
So when we were ready to buy our house 10 years ago, my parents were like, you guys need to go 15 years. We're like, no, we're going to go the traditional 30 years. They're like, no, you're not doing that. You're going to go house poor and pay all this mortgage for 15 years. So in hindsight, yes, my parents are so smart, you know, immigrant families. They want you to pay off things so quickly. Right. And here we are struggling. But we're glad that we listened, because that set us up to be in a position where we are now, where we had so much equity in the house. And at that time, houses were going up in price. So when we refinanced and got that HELOC out, it worked out really good to have a good chunk of money down for the rehab.
I love hearing that. I think
it was about like what? 20. It was like 25 we needed. We were able to pull out.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a house hack, right? Because I mean, you could kind of look at it that way, right? You didn't know what you were doing at the time, but you know, even though you didn't buy right, like a house hack is you're betting on the equity to either cash out or do a refi and use later down the road. So I think that's a great topic to talk about for you guys listening, is like you could house hack a property, which is a home that might need to get renovated. You can force equity through renovations, but that's kind of another tool that you can use with a bank. I don't even know if it's called house hacking, but just doing a 15 year mortgage and hammering down your principal, and you'll have forced that equity a lot faster by making larger payments. So you could do a combination of both, but that was awesome because that really sets you up to do this first property. So it's cool to hear.
It really did. Mm-hmm. I mean, we learned a lot on that first one. I learned how to not order so much materials because I was still learning what linear feet was and what square feet was. And so I ordered pallets of trim.
We had enough, like our first three.
Our first three projects of trim. So
I saved you a lot of money, right? You know, you buy it in bulk.
Yeah. It did. But that stood in our garage for years. I mean, really. Nev was like, oh, we need trim. I said, did you check our garage? Because I'm sure there's a pack left in there. And that really lasted us a long time. Like a long time.
And then, you became somewhat of the like a GC or contractor for a little bit too, right? Because that was kind of your role is getting these properties renovated, right?
Yep, I'm mechanical. I'm good with my hands, but with YouTube, you accomplish a lot.
how did you work on that first property, right?
Yep, I did almost everything on the first property.
Oh yeah, a lot of sweat equity. The kids were even involved. They were shoveling dirt.
Oh my god!
I actually learned how to do tile from the neighbor to our first flip. Mm-hmm. It was an older gentleman. And he came over to introduce himself because he seen all the construction going on, and he was retired and he did tile all his life. So when he got around to doing tile, he said he'd come over and show me, and he came over and showed me, and that's how I learned how to do tile.
And we still use him to this day for jobs.
He was just here. That's why I was kind of late.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yep. Man. So again, networking. Yeah. Networking. You know, it's all who you know. And so, you know, I always try to meet neighbors and see what they're all about and invite them over to the house and say, you know, we're improving your neighborhood. We're improving, you know, the value of your house. And so when we have open houses, we really invite them to come over and check it out.
Most of our houses, you know, they're always the ugliest one in the neighborhood. So when they see you fixing it up, they're like, they really appreciate it. And they're like very friendly. They come over like, oh, thank you so much. You know, that the house was such an eyesore. I couldn't even walk my dog by there and stuff like that. So they really appreciate what you do for the neighborhood, which feels good.
That's awesome. And that's a great way to get referrals. I think I didn't do it on my last flip, but I remember someone told me like whenever you close on a home, just to send out letters to like the surrounding properties to introduce yourself. And if you see anything you like, don't like, make sure, you know, call me if there's trash flies out on your lawn, but even better, just go knock on the doors and introduce yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we give out a lot of cars that way too.
So what do you think? What do you think was like? I have an idea of where this is going to go, but like, what caused you guys to be successful? Like, what was it about you that you think stood out the most for to be where you are today? Like personality, money, networking. Like, what was it about you two that you think in your character that caused you to be successful, or that is taking you down that road to reach your goals?
I think networking is a really, it's so important to have relationships out there. Trusting your numbers, because, you know, so many people make numbers to make the deal work.
Yeah.
If the numbers don't work, the numbers don't lie. So then we just make good judgment calls on that.
Hmm.
So, you know, we've been fortunate and humble enough to, you know, not lose any money on any deals. And I think the support of everyone that we've ever worked with in the past continues to want to work with us. You know, we, you know, go out and have, you know, lunches or dinners and get together and, you know, still reach out to those people when we were working, just starting out, and still continue to have those relationships with them.
That's awesome. I think the word that I pulled out from that is like humility. I think I like that word for you guys. And I'm just saying, I think you guys are awesome, and you have to have a heart to serve people in real estate. I think a lot of people forget that. Like, that's part of networking. You can't just take things in networking. You have to add value to people. You have to serve them. You know, we're solving problems for sellers. We have to serve them through what we do. We have to be compassionate. We have to be ethical. We have to be honest. We have to have integrity. And I think those are all the things that you guys have, which is why I love having you on the show. And I'm just sharing those things because, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I'm sure you have like newer investors reaching out to you, and it almost seems like everyone is just all about the dollar, very transactional. They're just trying to make some quick money, and it doesn't work like that. You guys said it. You spent $35,000 on education, and it took you about a year to get your first deal. And through that time, you guys cultivated and built the foundation you needed through other people, through networking, to have those relationships, to be readily available to like find money for a lender when the timing was right. So you can't just get into this right away and be like, start slinging out deals and making money. It takes a lot of time to even get started.
It does. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, and even with contractors, we've been really blessed to have the people that we've been working with, and also like come to find out who we don't want to work with. Yeah. Right. And I think that's important too, because contractors want to work with who they want to work with, and they have all the power right now. If they don't want to work with you or don't want to come over and give you a bid or a quote, then you're screwed. You continually have to find good people that have the same vision as you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking today, I hired a new contractor on one of my flips right now. He's a great guy, but one of the things that keeps standing out the most is like, you know, excuses. Like, I keep hearing excuses. Mm-hmm. Like, excuses, although they could be true, like, who cares? Just like, you just do the work.
You get to work.
Just do it. Like, I don't want to hear excuses every time something goes wrong. Let's just try to find a solution. You know, so I think that's one of the biggest things that is starting to stand out to me the most is like, yeah, something went wrong, but instead of like focusing on what went wrong, let's focus on what we need to do to make it right. And I think, you know, if we all thought like that more often, or I don't know why contractors have such a hard time focusing on what needs to be done as opposed to creating excuses, then we would all be a lot farther along. If we just focus on, and you don't have to become angry, right? It's like, all right, this went wrong. Let's just figure out how we can fix it. Like, not that difficult. Mm-hmm. But that's what I've learned, I feel like, this past year dealing with contractors. But can you give anyone advice? Like, you brought up a good point. The market's hot. Contractors are a rare commodity, especially good contractors. Materials hard to find. It's super expensive. So what is some advice you could give people that want to start flipping properties, maybe want to start turning over some rental properties, to cultivate or find the right people to work with?
Well, what I found is I snap pictures when I'm like driving. If I see like a contractor's van or if it's a roofer or whatever, I snap pictures. When I'm in Home Depot, we've gotten so many contractors just in Home Depot alone. Yep. Yeah. And so I just grab their cards or I grab their contact info or, you know, and then when we find a really good one, we ask those good contractors like, hey, do you know a good electrician or do you know a good mason? Because they're in the industry. They know, you know, who's they're working with and who's doing what.
So how are you screening them to, how do you know that they're a good contractor? Like what's your process like to screen that contractor?
They show up for a quote. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So are you getting those business cards and are you asking for referrals? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Referred by someone or someone that worked with us knows someone, you know, is like a link somewhere.
Yeah. That someone used them before and was able to vouch for them.
And most of the time we hit it off good with those, but ones that we venture off or, you know, just schedule something with someone and then get those usually don't work out too good.
Yeah.
That's I love pulling over to the side of the road too. When I see like contractors who are working on gutters or siding or roofing, and I'll just ask, hey, who's in charge? I want to talk to the person in charge, and I'll just grab their contact and say, you know, I'm an investor. I'm also a real estate agent. You know, I can give you referrals, you know, I have a couple places that need a quote. Can you give me some of that? And then just see what how they respond to you and how quickly they respond to your quotes is really a good telltale sign that they're looking, they need the work.
Yeah.
And they're willing to work with you. When they take forever and they don't respond to you, we just put them at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you have a plumber or an electrician, you know, like one of each. It's better to have a bunch because, you know, people are human. They have their own lives. And if, you know, your electrician, something happens in his life and you have a project going on, you can't count on him to get it done if he's somewhere else in emergency. So you have to have like
backup to backup.
You don't want that to affect your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's another great point is like have multiple trades available in your Rolodex. Another thing too, it's like you know, finding the properties is one thing. And I think it was, I can't remember what guy, it was like this big social influencer on Instagram, but he's like the other puzzle piece. There's a learning curve for the construction phase, right? Because you're going to find some good contractors and you're going to find some bad contractors. So it might take you 1 to 3 flips to find the good ones before you even get a business model that maybe is even making you money, right? That's something that I never considered getting into flipping. It's like, you know, you might not make money because you might've hired the wrong contractor on that first property. I mean, but that's the only way to find the right one is when one goes bad, right? And that's part of the huge learning curve is like building that team up. And the only way you could do that is if you buy a house and you flip it or you renovate it. What if you're running it? But that, I mean, that's something that I don't think a lot of people think about. Mm-hmm. They might do their first flip and consider it a failure. But I think people need to look at that differently and say, take that as a learning experience and just walk through that, like what they did wrong. Because that's part of being a real estate investor. Mm-hmm. Is failure is building that team out. I think that's a great point that a lot of people probably don't even talk about or consider.
Yeah. Yeah. They always think about, oh, I got to market to find the house. And then once I get the house, then, you know, you have all these people come through it. It's you got to find those people to come through it because just it's so hard to come by now. And like you said, materials are really expensive now. You got to know the market. You got to be able to tweak that and adjust for that. Things are going, you know, double, triple the price of what it was a year ago. It's so hard.
Yeah. I think I'm done flipping this year. I'm going to sell all my rental properties in smooth sale.
Yeah.
So
this is our last one for the summer.
Mm-hmm. You're going to, and then you guys are just going to enjoy the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. We bought a camper. So we're going to go camping with the kids. Yeah, real estate has been able to do that for us. Yep.
What are the best lessons?
We're going glamping.
Where are you going glamping?
We got a couple places. We just went to Watkins Glen. We're going to go to Jellystone, Letchworth. So a few places around New York.
Very cool. I think that's incredible. You guys get to do that. Did you guys ever get to meet Steve Cook at all through Life in Air? I don't know if you ever.
I never met Steve Cook. No. Mm-mm.
But he had this.
He's your coach, right?
Well, he was, yeah. He's not coaching me anymore, but he had a significant impact. I mean, one of the things that he said was, you can always make more money. And that really stood out to me because, like, what are you going to make all this money for if you're not enjoying the journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you can focus, and that could be, like, just reducing your spending, like, looking at your debt, looking at your budget. I mean, a lot of people can say, might be able to save $5,000 to $10,000 a year just by reworking their budget or going through their budget. So it's not just about the money you make. It's about what you do with the money that you already have coming in. So it's awesome to hear that you guys are actually
Life in Air was great in that aspect. Yeah, we really took some really great points in Life in Air when we were part of them. And you know, we did our vision boards and you know, we were able to, when we first started with them, there were a few things we needed to know, we needed to do, we needed to get our debt down. And, you know, we were able to do that. So that feels good. And we have no car payments now. Yes. That feels good. So that's really set us up for what, you know, where we are right now, to have summer off with the kids. And I'm less and less more at the nail shop at my family's, you know, really just doing real estate, concentrating on that. So I think that's given us where we thought we would be 5 years into.
All right, got you. We lost you there for a second.
Sorry.
You're good. So that's incredible. So it sounds like you took your 5-year plan and went to and took that to 2 years.
Yeah. It took us right under 5 years. So we've met all of our 5-year plans in under five years. Yeah. So we're 4-year mark that just passed.
That's awesome. Yep. I'm proud of you guys.
Thanks. It feels good. It feels really good to be able, when you look back at your goals, it feels good to check those things off.
So what are some of your other, like, 2021, do you guys have any other, like, big goals or anything else you guys are focusing on the rest of 2021?
I think I would like to get more rentals. I think that would be...
We're looking for, like, bigger units or a campsite, some land, trailer park, storage.
Nice. Now, are you guys self-managing all your rentals right now?
For now, yeah.
And do you guys?
Yeah, once we get to a certain number, I'm hoping to you know, hand that off to someone.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Start planning that now.
Once our property is ready, I don't go back into them. We have a handy guy who goes in and
helps us out.
He does all that. Once tenants are in there, I do the rehabbing before they move in, but then after that, I never go back in.
That's awesome.
I'm
So we're almost to that hour mark. This call went exactly where I wanted to go. And I think, like, the biggest golden nugget that, guys, if you're listening to this, is, like, networking, or just people in general, and just having the right mindset to know that you can't, like, you literally, you can't do it on your own. You can try, but it's going to be a difficult, long, and hard road if you try to do everything on your own. And the other thing too is, like, investing in yourself. Like,
Coaching is what really helped us, because we took full advantage of that. We call our coaches every week. They helped us stay accountable. You know, they made sure we set our goals and what we wanted to accomplish. And I think if we didn't have that, someone to almost hold our hand and say, this week you need to accomplish this, and next week you need to do this, I don't think we'll be able to take as many actions to get where we are right now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. I've been mean, I think I'm going on like maybe 5 years of having a coach. And, you know, I think it's, if you really look at different forms of investment, and I don't know where I stole this from, but like personal investment is the only investment that's always guaranteed to have a return, but you have to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you're going to spend a ton of money on yourself, it only works if you do something with it. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the tools, but you have to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
For sure. Well, guys, do you have any advice? Like, I am just getting started in real estate. Let's pretend I'm a newbie investor. I'm like, Jenny Neff, I want to buy a house. What do you say to that person?
Okay. Yeah, that's great. You want to buy a house. What are you going to do once you get it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do with it? You got to have a clear plan of what your action steps are going to be, what your exit strategy is going to be. You have to have that in place before going into it. And in order to do that, you know, what are you thinking it's going to get you there? That's where I would say. How about you?
I love it.
What position are you going to play? Are you going to do the work? Are you going to hire it out? You know, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you know? You know, it's what do you know to...
Yeah.
To provide for the deal.
Yeah. Who do you know to make the deal work? Are you funding it yourself, or are you going to have someone else do it for you? So these are the kind of questions I would ask them and, you know, get them thinking about what they need to do to get there.
Yeah. So having a clear vision, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got to have a plan.
And a team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, thanks for sharing that. For those of you guys listening, I mean, it might seem super simple, but I have plenty of podcasts on the Flip of Freedom show where like people get started knowing nothing, but it all revolves around being around the right people and being an action taker. So that's why I was so pumped to get you guys on the show, because I really love sharing the message of like how you can get started. Some people, it takes making that jump, which could look like investing in yourself. I had to do the same thing. You know, I put 10 grand on a credit card, like, here, take my money.
Yeah.
Like, I know I can do it. Mm-hmm. But I just need help. And it's okay with like going into something as a complete newbie, knowing nothing, because like that's how everyone gets started. It's okay not knowing.
That's how everyone gets started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people are afraid to admit that they don't know something, or they feel like that they need to be here in order to get to there, when you can just get started without knowing anything.
Get started and dive in.
Yeah. So how can people get a hold of you guys if they want
to take that leap of faith and believe in yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be ready.
Yeah. You guys can find us on Facebook, you know, Golden Eye Property Investments. You can, you know, my name, Jenny Lee, or, you know, you're looking for a realtor. It's Jenny Lee Real Estate Services over on Facebook. Hopefully you'll plug my email in there at the bottom.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you can contact us that way.
Yeah.
But we would love to reach out to anyone that's, you know, willing to learn and, you know, answer any questions. You know, we have help and we want to give that back to someone else. So we know exactly how that feels to be new and not knowing what you don't know.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, you guys. Same here. Like that's why I love cultivating these relationships, because like when you have someone willing to give you their time as an expert, and they can help you reach your goals, like you're always paying that forward. So guys, if you have a deal that you're trying to work, call Jenny and Neff. They'll probably walk you through that whole thing from start to finish. Like joint venture on a deal, that's the best
way
to get started, is just a JV with an experienced investor. And if I were to recommend, you know, if I had a handful of people to choose to refer to people to do that, you guys would definitely be part of the top five list. So reach out to Jenny and Neff. Like I said, they add a tremendous amount of value. You know, they're flipping properties. They're living out their vision in under 5 years, which is incredible. So, well, thanks for tuning in, guys. Until next time, have a blessed day. Bye.
That's all for this episode of the Flip for Freedom Show. But we have you covered with even more value. Head on over to the Flip for Freedom private Facebook page and gain free instant access to some incredible resources and Brett himself. There is power in numbers. Need accountability? Help closing your next deal. or running some numbers, we have you covered. Take advantage of this limited opportunity. Interested in learning how to find, fund, fix, and successfully flip your next home? Looking for a serious dose of accountability? Brett jumps in the trenches with you, making sure you stay on course to hit your goals. Get started today and head on over to www.flipforfreedom.life. Flip for Freedom Coaching offers holistic support wherever you are in your flipping journey. We bring the reinforcement, you get results. We'll catch you next time here on the Flip for Freedom Show.